supporting that. The infrastructure in the U.S. is crumbling apart. The cost of higher education has gone through the roof. It's something like $40,000 or $50,000 a year to go to university. So I think just as the people in West Asia will benefit from the U.S. withdrawing from the area, so will the public in the United States.
And on that note, I thank both of you being with us on the Spotlight. Zaidan Mutalibi, Iraqi politician and former political advisor to the Iraqi government out of Baghdad, and Rick Sterling, activist, Syria Solidarity Movement member out of Walnut Creek, California. And thank you for being with us once again on Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillahi ulaika yarjuna rahmatallah. أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. More Palestinians are killed in the Gaza Strip as Israel defies all international calls to stop its months-long deadly onslaught on the territory's civilian population. Hamas says the operation, which killed three American servicemen, is a clear message to the U.S. that Israel's killing of innocent people in Gaza must stop. In Iran's Prime Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian is in Islamabad on a one-day visit to discuss key bilateral and regional issues with his Pakistani counterpart and other senior officials. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel keeps pounding Gaza, killing more Palestinians in the already devastated territory. 40 people have lost their lives in fresh strikes in Gaza City, as well as in the Sa'ared camp located in the center of the Strip. Israel's genocidal war is now in its 115th day. The total death toll has surpassed 26,400. Tens of thousands have also been injured. Apart from casualties, the relentless attacks have inflicted a catalog of miseries on the people of Gaza. According to Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, more than 25,000 kids have lost one or both parents in Gaza since October the 7th. Meanwhile, a Palestinian armed faction reports that it shot down an Israeli drone over the southern Gaza Strip. The Mujahideen Brigades also said that it bombed an Israeli aviation base in the southern occupied Palestinian territories. From Deir al-Balah, our correspondent Muti Abu Musabeh joins us to give us the latest. Muti, good morning. Why don't you tell us the most recent developments that you have there in the Gaza Strip?
Actually, the last night was hellish and bloody for the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip, not only here in Deir al-Balah city or in the central area of Gaza Strip, but across all areas of Gaza Strip, as the Israeli warplanes maintained their attacks on the Palestinian residential areas. In the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly in the Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes pounded several residential buildings and apartments, claiming the lives of at least 40 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, And as you can see right now here in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, as we speak, that the bereaved people of the families of those Palestinian martyrs who were killed last night, they are gathering right now in order to bid farewell to the Palestinian martyrs and to do the prayer to their martyrs in order to mourn them to their last destination amid wide outcries and grief and pain, actually, because of the relentless Israeli airstrike. So it's the same and the most frequent scene repeated from the first day of this continuous onslaught on Gaza. We are talking about at least 40 Palestinian civilians. This is what happened in the central area of Gaza Strip. And when it comes to Gaza City, also it was a harsh night for the Palestinians there as the Israeli occupation forces renewed their attacks on several residential areas inside Gaza City, where at least 23 Palestinian civilians have been killed as the Israeli occupation forces attacked a school which was taken shelter by the Palestinian evacuees from the northern parts of Gaza Strip. And in addition to that, 10 Palestinian civilians also lost their lives after the Israeli occupation forces attacked several residential buildings in Ashata refugee camp. So we are talking about continuous Israeli crimes committed left, right, and center across all areas of Gaza Strip. And it's worth mentioning that till this moment, as we speak right now, we can hear the Israeli bombardments resulted in from the continuous shelling of the Israeli artillery towards the eastern parts of the central area of Gaza Strip and elsewhere, even in Khan Yunis City and in Gaza City. So it's the same behavior of the Israeli occupation forces, continuous airstrikes claiming the lives of more Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, amid wide grief and wide pain of the Palestinian civilians. We are talking about today, it's 115 consecutive days of this continuous onslaught on Gaza, and the number of the Palestinian casualties is rising, actually, with these continuous attacks against Gaza Strip.
There are reports that some of the Israeli regime forces have actually started being removed from certain parts of the Gaza Strip. Do you have any, reports on that or information on that, Moti?
Yes, it was reported yesterday that the Israeli occupation forces withdrew several forces on the ground. It's seen by the people here in Gaza as a kind of repositioning of those forces. And to the Palestinian people here in Gaza Strip, it's the same, because the Israeli occupation forces maintain targeting those areas and the Palestinian civilians from the air by using the Israeli war planes. And on the ground, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces is still attempting to invade and to practice more offensive ground offensive. Particularly inside Gaza City. It was reported yesterday or over the last night that the Israeli tanks managed to move forward in the depth of Gaza City and Arimal neighborhood and in the surrounding areas of Ashifa Hospital amid fierce gunfight of the Palestinian resistance. And drastic clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces on the ground. It means that the Palestinian resistance is still stand to its ground, while the Israeli occupation forces repeatedly attempt to infiltrate or to raid those areas which were taken or which were invaded previously by the Israeli occupation forces. I mean that even if the Israeli occupation forces withdrew some of their forces from Gaza, it doesn't mean that the attacks are going to be low or to be minimized. We are talking about escalation of the attacks against the Palestinian people, claiming more lives of the Palestinian people, because the Israeli occupation forces mainly depend on the aerial attacks on Gaza Strip.
Thank you for that. We appreciate it. Moti Abu Masaba, correspondent there, talking to us from Deir al-Balah. Thank you, Moti. The U.S. says three of its troops have been killed in a drone strike on a military base in Jordan. This marks the first time that U.S. military personnel have been killed in an attack since the start of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza on October 7. In a statement, U.S. President Joe Biden said the attack took place in northeast Jordan near the Syrian border. Jordan, however, says it did not occur on its soil, but in Syria. The U.S. Central Command said at least 25 service members were also injured. Biden blamed resistance groups in Iraq and also in Syria for the attack, but there has been no claim of responsibility so far. Since October 7th, there have been around 160 attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria. Most of those have been claimed by regional resistance forces who blame the U.S. for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Palestinian resistance movements have reacted to a drone strike on a U.S. military base in Jordan. They say the killing of American soldiers and the strike is a reminder to Washington that the ongoing war on Gaza must stop. A senior Hamas official said the strike is a message to the White House, warning against the continuation of the U.S.-Israeli aggression against Gaza. Sami Abu Zuhri added that the region could see, quote, an explosion if the aggression rages on. Another resistance movement, the Islamic Jihad, also said the operation against the U.S. base is a natural and legitimate response to the presence of American forces in the region. The Gaza-based movement described as shameless the U.S. support for the genocide that's being committed against Palestinians in the besieged Strip. Iran's mission to the U.N. said the Islamic Republic has nothing to do with the attack, added that it is part of the conflict between the U.S. Army and resistance groups in the region, which reciprocate retaliatory attacks. At least one Palestinian has been killed and several others injured as Israeli troops carry out fresh raids in a number of areas across the occupied West Bank. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent, Mona Kandil, who gave us more details on the raids. Let's take a listen.
This is what happened last night. Israeli troops had raided first the city of Jenin and some neighborhoods of the refugee camp of Jenin. And they also stormed the Al-Hadaf neighborhood. And at least one Palestinian has been arrested by the Israeli forces. During this military raid, Israeli troops also stormed the village of Al-Yamun. In Al-Yamun, clashes had erupted between Palestinians and Israeli forces. This is what the residents of Al-Yamun have said. And at least one Palestinian has been seriously wounded. Later, this young Palestinian man, 21-year-old Thaer Hammo, succumbed to his injuries. And he was, of course, seriously wounded and transferred to a small clinic there in the Jenin area, and the doctors later said that this young man has succumbed to his injuries. During the military raid, the Jenin Israeli forces have caused severe destruction in the infrastructure. The Israeli forces destroyed also some parts of homes during this military raid. The main destruction was in the infrastructure of the roads, all the streets leading to the refugee camp of Jenin, as well as in the neighborhoods of the Jenin refugee camp.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has carried out fresh strikes against Israeli positions. Among the targets are several gatherings of Israeli forces in the northern parts of the occupied Palestinian territories near Lebanon's southern borders. Hezbollah also hit Israel's espionage equipment at the Ras al-Nakura site with precision missiles. The resistance movement fired two Falak 1 missiles at the Kherbet Meir base as well. Hezbollah and the Israeli military have been exchanging fires since the genocidal war on Gaza began. Israeli forces frequently launch attacks on areas in southern Lebanon. In response, Hezbollah targets Israeli troops and military positions across Lebanon's southern border. The movement says it aims to support Palestinian resistance fighters who are battling Israel inside Gaza by engaging the regime forces at another front. Author and commentator John Stepling believes the resistance front has emerged victorious from the Israeli onslaught on Gaza.
The blockade of the Red Sea is continuing to stalemate the U.S. It is costing Israel billions of dollars, costing the U.S. billions of dollars. They don't know what to do. They have been stalemated. They have no answer to this. The Yemeni forces and Sarula have won, essentially, and where this goes, it is causing a panic in Washington because they don't have an answer for it. They don't know what to do. And it strips away another, you know, layer of this veneer of invincibility and military superiority that the U.S. has clung to. because they're not. They don't know what to do. The Israeli military, by the way, is suffering enormous losses, huge losses. It's part of why there's so much anger now directed at Netanyahu, because he not only has not gotten hostages released, but there are the IDF casualty figures are unprecedented, huge numbers. One wonders if Israel can survive this. I don't see how they can. They are losing. They have lost this whole post October 7th conflict has been won by Hamas and lost by Israel.
Iran's foreign minister is in Islamabad on an official visit to discuss bilateral ties with top Pakistani officials, including the country's prime minister and army chief. During the meetings, Hossein Amir Abdullahian will be discussing the latest issues related to bilateral relations, security, and economic cooperation. According to the foreign ministry, the discussions will focus on countering terrorism along the common borders. This is the second official visit by Iran's top diplomat to Pakistan this year. Several European capitals have witnessed rallies in solidarity with Palestinians as Israel pushes its genocide in the Gaza Strip. In the Danish capital of Copenhagen, the protesters condemned Israel's atrocities in the besieged Gaza Strip and called for an end to the genocide. Also in Spain, people marched in Madrid to denounce the onslaught on Gaza. The demonstrators voiced support for South Africa's case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. They also carried flags of Palestine and South Africa and chanted pro-Palestinian slogans. Countries across the world have seen mass pro-Palestinian rallies since Israel began its deadly aggression on the Gaza Strip on October 7. UN expert slams countries that have paused funding for UNRWA, saying that their decision overtly defies the order by the International Court of Justice to allow humanitarian assistance to reach Gaza.
Defunding UNRWA at this critical time overtly defies ICJ's order to allow effective humanitarian assistance to address the adverse conditions of life faced by Palestinians in Gaza. This will entail legal responsibilities or the demise of the international legal system.
Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, said the government's cutting funds to UNRWA are most likely violating their obligations under the Genocide Convention. Albanese also highlighted the timing of the defunding, which came one day after the International Court of Justice's conclusion that Israel is plausibly committing genocide in Gaza. Several Western countries, including the U.S. and the U.K., have suspended funding to UNRWA following Israeli allegations that some of the agency's staff were involved in Hamas's October 7 operation. The former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, Greg Murray, says the West's defunding of the U.N.'s Agency for Palestinian Refugees is a reaction to the ICJ's ruling against the Israeli regime. Let's listen to what he told us in our Spotlight program.
I think in part it's a coordinated reaction to the International Court of Justice ruling. And it's important to note that in its findings of fact on the genocide, what the ICJ said was plausibly a genocide in Gaza, UNRWA was quoted quite extensively for giving facts on the ground. So obviously that gives them a motive to discredit UNRWA before future ICJ hearings. And also, of course, it adds to the genocide. It increases the genocidal pressure and speeds up the genocide by potentially denying incredibly needed food, water, and sustenance to the people of Gaza.
Kuwait has welcomed the recent ruling by the International Court of Justice against Israel, urging the international community to exert further pressure on Israel to halt its aggression and to ensure immediate delivery of humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent in Kuwait City has asked Kuwaiti citizens what they think about their country's stance.
As Kuwaitis, I believe that our position as people and state is a matter of principle. It's a humanitarian, Arab, Muslim principle. And we'll never change that despite the constant pressure to scare us like what happened a few days ago when Kuwait discovered a Daesh-affiliated group and was planning for a terrorist attack. It is like these groups are trying to send a message from Kuwait to other countries who are in the region. Kuwait's support is fixed on Palestine and won't budge an inch. And every living human being with a conscious mind must do something for Gaza.
What is happening in Gaza is unjust and inhumane. All of Europe and the entire world supported Ukraine during the Arab War, but not Gaza. Why a different treatment? What crimes did the Palestinians commit to receive such a horrifying destiny? Those children and women dying in the cold and constant Israeli missile attacks, they are dying in their sleep. This is unbearable. Everything happening in Gaza has nothing to do with humanity because it is genocide, a genocide, a genocide.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. so to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The Euromed Human Rights Monitor condemned the horrific crimes against Palestinians waiting for humanitarian aid in Gaza City. It said it documented a similar incident recently when civilians gathered southeast of Gaza City were targeted by Israeli artillery shells as they waited for UN relief trucks, resulting in several casualties. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, in November, a bystander recorded the apparent execution of Hala Rashid Abd al-Ati while she was holding hands with her young grandson, who was waving a white flag, as they and other family members attempt to flee from Gaza City. In December, the Zionist regime military killed three young men who were captured during the Hamas operation and held in Gaza. Sarah Lee Whitson, the director of the Washington-based human rights watchdog Dawn, said that it was hardly the first time that the Zionist regime military had gunned down civilians in Gaza waving white flags. She added, "Literally every single Israeli policy we have criticized for the past 20 years as a violation of international humanitarian law is many magnitudes worse today. This is what impunity begets." That impunity has been dealt an unprecedented challenge after South Africa invoked the 1948 Genocide Convention against the Zionist regime at the International Court of Justice. That tribunal is set to deliver a decision regarding South Africa's request for provisional measures similar to an injunction or restraining order that could include a cessation of hostilities in Gaza while it considers the full case. Recently, Patel, the U.S. State Department spokesperson, declined to say whether the United States would respect the International Court of Justice ruling. Meanwhile, Biden and his secretaries of state and defense are being sued for their failure to prevent what the plaintiffs say is a genocide unfolding in Gaza and for their complicity in the genocide against Palestinians. A federal court in California will be hearing the case. 16 humanitarian and human rights groups recently called on UN member states to immediately halt the transfer of weapons to Israel. The UN's Human Rights Office warned recently that further intensification of already relentless Israeli regime airstrikes and ground fighting in Khan Yunis in recent days has exacerbated dangers for civilians. The UN office noted the January 21st statement by the Zionist regime war minister Yoav Gallant promising that the mushrooms of smoke will cover the skies of the Gaza Strip until we achieve our goals. The Zionist regime's military operations in Khan Yunis have pushed an increasing number of Palestinians, many of them already displaced, to Rafah in southernmost Gaza, where half of the territory's population of 2.3 million people are now concentrated, many of them without adequate shelter. The UN Human Rights Office raised grave alarm over a potential escalation of hostilities in Rafah, with the attendant risk that people who are essentially trapped in smaller and smaller areas may be forced out of Gaza.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show focusing on investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In this week's show, we'll be delving into the dubious activities of a number of British charities who've been raising funds for Israeli soldiers engaged in genocide in Gaza. We'll be asking some probing questions about why the Charity Commission hasn't intervened, when its role is to make sure that charities fulfil their legal obligations and are accountable for their actions. The Commission has a statutory duty to investigate concerns identified in the administration and running of charities. Yet there's no evidence of it acting on its obligations in these cases. Atif Abu Chakra has been looking into which charities are involved and some of the prominent individuals associated with them.
The Association for Israel's Soldiers is based in occupied Palestine and claims to be the sole avenue through which donations can be made directly to IOF soldiers and IOF units. These donations come from Zionists in Palestine, as well as from the US, Canada, Brazil, Mexico, France, and the UK. The UK Friends of the Association for the Well-being of Israel Soldiers is a registered charity which is obliged by law to show public benefit. Its charitable objectives include relief of need and suffering, advancement of education, and provision of facilities for recreation of the occupation forces. Guidance published by the Charity Commission states that it is a legal requirement that any detriment or harm that results from charitable purposes must not outweigh the benefit. Perhaps supporting genocide outweighs those purposes. Amongst the trustees of the charity are Colonel Richard Kemp, a former British soldier said to have hateful views on Islam and Muslims. In December, the BBC was criticised for interviewing Kemp without reference to his role as a UK Avis trustee. In one recent interview with a pro-Israel blog, Kemp was quoted as describing the killing of civilians in Gaza as necessary. Palestine Declassified has traced around 20 charities which have donated to UK Avis over the last 15 years. The following are notable donors: Gerald and Gail Ronson Family Foundation, which was created by Gerald Ronson, the convicted fraudster, who runs the Rontec company, operating over 250 BP and Esso service stations in the UK. Ronson also set up the Community Security Trust that runs point of the Zionist regime in the UK. Though one of its charitable objectives mentions opposing extremism, this is yet another example showing that Ronson, in reality, supports extremism and genocide. Loftus Charitable Trust, set up by the Loftus family, which made its money from the watchmaking firm Accurist. It also funds the extremist Zionist sect Shabbat Lubavitch, Islamophobic think tanks, Jewish supremacist groups in East Jerusalem, and the Community Security Trust. David and Ruth Lewis Family Charitable Trust, set up by the Lewis family, which own River Island clothing chain. The charity also funds Islamophobic think tank and illegal settlements in East Jerusalem. The Family Foundations Trust, set up by the UK property investor Richard Mintz. The charity has funded the extremist sect Shabbat Lubavitch, Islamophobic think tanks, and the Community Security Trust. Richard's son and charity trustee Joshua co-founded the website Friend a Soldier, an online platform where soldiers can become digital ambassadors. UK Avis is already under investigation by the UK charity regulator, the Charity Commission. The investigation should widen to include the nexus of genocide-supporting charities we have revealed. They should be shut down by the Charity Commission.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobby and watchdog Spinwatch and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. And I'm pleased to welcome back Masood Sijara, who's our guest contributor today. Masood is the chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission and is a veteran human rights campaigner. He was actually a key driving force behind the creation of the Islamic Human Rights Commission back in 1997. Welcome to the show. David, Latifa referred to the Association for the Wellbeing of Israeli Soldiers, didn't she, in her report there? I mean, what exactly does the money that it raises pay for?
Well, it says that it's there to relief, to give need, whether there's need and suffering. Of course, whether the suffering has been caused by the occupation forces or not is obviously a key question. But they provide all sorts of things for them. They provide leisure facilities, they provide swimming pools for them, gym facilities, synagogues, and also they have an enlistment festival. So they have this kind of rock festival where they all dance around and sing songs, presumably about wiping out the people of Gaza. So they're there to help the genocide in Gaza, and the money that goes from them and from the other organisations in different countries, it's millions and millions of pounds every year, goes to support effectively the killing of children in Gaza.
Masood, I mean, what sanctions do you think this charity should face then?
Well, according to the principles of Charity Commission, it is unlawful to raise charity funds for any armed forces except the British Armed Forces.
Right.
But the fact also is that this particular genocide which is taking place, you can't really support this genocide in any way under international law.
No, of course not.
But we go one step even further than that. The Charity Commission always asks a question. How could you justify this particular project is charitable? How could, for God's sake, be charitable to raise funds to give to a genocidal armed forces, which in the last 3 months has killed 25 to 30,000 people, 70% of them women and children?
Yeah.
I mean, how could you justify such a thing to be charitable? You know, these charities, and there is a whole spectrum for them, they claim that they're addressing the needs of the IDF based on IDF's sort of requirement. So they're really basically serving the Israeli Defense Force, this illegal occupier, this apartheid army, this sort of army which is committing the greatest genocide of our time.
Yeah.
How could this be charitable? How could anyone get tax relief for killing and committing genocide?
Well, it certainly seems like an abuse, doesn't it? But, I mean, David, Latifa mentioned some of the charities that are supporting genocide by donating to this Association for the Wellbeing of Israeli Soldiers, but, I mean, there's a longer list, isn't there, than the list that Latifa...
Well, she mentioned in particular some details about three or four of the charities, but we've unearthed some 20 different charities, all of which are associated with Zionist families. They set up these family foundations based on the wealth from the business enterprises they've been involved in.
Yeah.
And so this is a quite widespread practice. I mean, there are literally millions and millions of pounds every year going into these kinds of charities, and they're spending them on all sorts of projects. And of course, what you find is that they tend to fund, yes, they fund the IDF, the Israeli occupation forces, as we should call them, but they also will fund illegal settlements and the Community Security Trust, and indeed, of course, in many cases, Islamophobic think tanks. So you've almost got a kind of Zionist funding bingo situation going on there, where you get all of them. These charities actually, it's a full house for every charity almost, that they have this big range of different the funds going to different places, and you can see that's what their aim is. The link that there is between those different sorts of funding recipients is very interesting.
Sure. Masood, the Islamic Human Rights Commission's made a complaint about another charity, hasn't it? Torahmet, just say a few words about that, will you?
Well, this is an umbrella which enables many charities, both in this country and overseas, to plug in and raise funds for a variety of things. And they're doing, a number of them are raising funds for Israeli Defense Force. In 2015, we made a complaint to Charity Commission regarding this particular project, they were raising money for IDF, and they were raising money for a glove, which the trigger finger could be removed so they could shoot and kill people easily. And, you know, Israeli soldiers were actually thanking and saying, thank you very much, because we are able to kill people better, you know, and more effective. And we made a complaint. The complaint was investigated internally without any reports. And basically, they stepped on the back of their hands, and the whole thing is continuing. We made a more extensive report complaint now, showing videos that they are packing bulletproof jackets, you know, knives, these huge army knives, you know, and sending it to Israeli Defense Forces and thanking people, Israeli Defense Force thanking the donors for supporting them in current genocidal acts and genocide that is taking place. And I just received a letter that they are investigating, but I won't hold my breath because over and over, investigation of these institutions is one standard, and investigation of everything else, you know, like Muslim charities. You can't organize a demonstration because Charity Commission says, how could that be accepted as a charitable? Yeah. And you bring in disrepute, but you could actually fund a genocidal army to kill people.
Incredible. Under the guise of charitable purposes.
Yeah, I want to highlight one thing. I mean, the Charity Commission, the whole procedure of Charity Commission was changed when Shawcross was put in charge. That is when we saw very clearly, and we're getting a lot of reports and complaints, it really sort of became more Islamophobic, and became an institution that actually enables to have double standard and give the green light to
Zionists. Let me just bring in David very, very, very quickly, because we're going to go to another report now. But is there any precedent, David, for challenging Zionist charities in the UK?
Well, absolutely there is. I mean, as Masoud has been saying, they themselves have challenged.
Indeed, to, well, the Human Rights Commission, certainly.
Back to 2015, I think. But, but going way back, there's been, you know, all sorts of investigations of Zionist charities, even back to the 1930s, the Jewish National Fund. It was a long-running investigation, went up to Parliament, the House of Lords was involved. So there is
What's the conclusion of these?
Well, they usually resulted in, for example, the Jewish National Fund is now allowed to function. It has most recently had another investigation because of the Islamophobic statements of some of its directors, but it continues to function, so they haven't been removed.
Right, OK. Well, we'll just take a pause there for a moment, because I want to look at our next report now about a Zionist charity that's flagrantly disregarding the meaning of charitable purpose.
Zionist occupation forces are provided with millions in funding every year from charities in the UK run by Zionist Jews and their non-Jewish supporters. These charities are almost wholly unknown. Palestine Declassified has unearthed new details on one of these charities called Beit Halochem. It is dedicated to raising money for what it calls our heroes who have fought to protect Israel, meaning members of the genocidal occupation forces currently engaged in mass killings in Gaza and throughout Palestine. Charitable objectives of the charity include the relief of adverse physical and mental effects suffered by individuals in Israel. It doesn't say so explicitly, but it is clear that the individuals noted do not include Palestinian civilians. As Beit Halochem says, its name literally means House of Warriors. This racism in application of its public benefit is one reason why this charity should be shut down by the UK Charity Commission. Another is that it violates the harm principle. The harm of supporting genocide clearly outweighs the benefits of rehabilitation of injured genocidaires. The chairman of the charity is Andrew Wolfson, of the hugely wealthy Wolfson family. The family is best known for its ownership of the Next retail empire. Wolfson also runs the Charles Wolfson Charitable Trust, which has donated over $600,000 to Beit Halochem since 2018. The charity also helps to encourage racism against Muslims by funding Islamophobic think tanks such as Civitas and Policy Exchange. It also funds the Jerusalem Foundation, which is directly engaged in settlement activity and ethnic cleansing in East Al-Quds Jerusalem. Palestine Declassified research reveals that the Beit Halohim receives funds and support from a range of other Zionist family foundations, including the Pears, Bluston, Denise Cohen, Ronson, and the Exilarchs Foundations or Trust. The Pears Foundation is run by the Pears brothers, once voted worst landlords in the UK. Their charity also funds Islamophobic think tanks and the extreme Chabad sect. The Exilarchs Foundation is run by David Dangor, the property magnate. His foundation also funds Islamophobic think tanks and the ethnic cleansing in East Al-Quds. Among the testimonials on the charity website is one from Ian Austin, the extreme Zionist who has displayed a profile picture on X referring to Gaza with the words, "Let Israel finish the job." There are also tributes from the Board of Deputies, the Chief Rabbi, and even Israel's settler-supporting extremist ambassador to the UK, Zippy Hotovly. Overall, Beit Halohim is devoted to supporting the genocidal Israel occupation forces in Gaza in what appears to be breaches of the UK charity law. Palestine Declassified will pass the evidence we have unearthed to the Charity Commission.
Masood, I mean, do you think there is a need for a wider effort from the Palestine Solidarity Movement to reveal, target and dismantle these charities as part of the, you know, the boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign?
Absolutely. I think the sort of the double standard which has been implemented very unapologetically by the Charity Commission needs to be challenged. And we need to sort of see why is it that overwhelming majority of organizations and charities who are being investigated are Muslim ones and not anyone else, and why that double standard there. And indeed, many of Muslim charities have had overall managers put in charge and the control taken away from the trustees. We want to see this happening, especially those charities which repeatedly have been sort of involved in doing unlawful activities. And I think we need to demand that those trustees in these charities, which are very few, sharing the trusteeship of different charities, need to be removed and barred from becoming a charity for some future years. Yeah. I think anything less than that is just a whitewash. It just proves that the government is putting pressure on Charity Commission to implement these double standards.
Yeah. David, I mean, the Wolfson family seem to be a really significant element, though, in organising support for genocide.
Yes, now, this is not widely known. People in the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, they talk about boycotting McDonald's or Coca-Cola. But look, the Wolfson family is absolutely central to some of this, to funding Islamophobic think tanks, and also in the way of Zionist bingo, they're also funding settlements and also funding the Israel occupation forces, which, of course, as we all know, are engaged in genocide as we speak. Yeah. And, of course, the Wolfson family run the retailer Next, not usually a subject of boycott for the BDS movement, but it really should be. I mean, like other retail firms like River Island, which, again, is run by a Zionist family, the Lewis family, these should be top of the list for BDS, because they're actively involved in supporting genocide.
No, indeed. And a lot more information needs to be imparted, I think, to the public about this, because a lot of people just will not be aware of it. But just Masood, I wonder whether you could tell us what you make of the data that we've revealed about donors supporting the occupation forces and the illegal settlements, as well as promoting Islamophobia.
Yeah, there's been a lot of research done, not so much in Britain, but in the United States, which is easier to get freedom of information, and that huge number of Islamophobic institutions are being funded by the Zionists. Yeah. And, you know, this is unfortunately, it's something that is very well known among the activists and so forth. But again, we need to use the boycotting to put pressure on these institutions. And indeed, we need to put pressure on the Charity Commission and others to stop sort of having this double standard. You know, Henry Jackson Society It's a menace,
yes,
for freedom of speech, for any aspect of principles that we all adhere to. Mm. But nevertheless, it's actually allowed to commit these Islamophobic and racist policies.
Yes, indeed. And building on the point that Masood was making there, David, just tell us a bit, will you, about the PEZ and Exolox foundations.
Yes, so, I mean, these are, again, another two. We've already covered quite a lot of different Zionist foundations in the show so far. So the PEZ Foundation, William Pears property company, voted by a BBC show some years ago as the worst landlords in the country. Yeah. And, you know, living up to the stereotype of the Jewish landlord, I mean, that's the most extraordinary thing about this. And then Exolox, again, property magnate, David Dangour, who runs this Exolox Foundation, strangely named foundation. And both of them give to the occupation forces, both of them give to Islamophobic think tanks, and both of them give to active ethnic cleansing in East Jerusalem. And so we're faced with a situation where it's not just these charities which are giving money to the occupation forces, but also all of the charities and foundations which give money to them, which need to be looked at. So there's a real case for looking at the PEZ and at Exolox and at the Wolfson Foundation, etc., and saying, look, these are organisations which do not fulfil a public benefit, where the harms they're causing by contributing to genocide way outweigh any benefits that they might give in the provision of swimming pools, for example, to the occupation forces.
No, indeed. And Masood, I mean, how will the Islamic Human Rights Foundation be engaging with these issues in the near future?
Well, we are making complaint according to all the investigation that we do. And the fact of the matter is that I think the standards needs to be implemented without any double standards and hypocrisy. One of the issues that the Charity Commission always uses against pro-Palestinian or Muslim charities is that they're saying that certain action of them is bringing the charity into disrepute. Mm. Now, for God's sake, how could not be the case that supporting a genocidal armed forces, it's bringing a charity to disrepute? You know, this standards needs to be based on the standards that we all adhere, not just a couple of Zionist entities who are seem to be implementing these policies.
Mm. And David, I mean, you know, obviously these charities should be targeted, clearly. I think that's pretty obvious. But what about the donors to these charities? I mean, shouldn't they be targeted as well?
Well, look, we've already listed a huge number in this episode. There are tons more which could be looked at. There are other charities giving money to the occupation forces. And it's about time that there were systematic complaints against probably scores of British Zionist charities which are giving money to ethnic cleansing, to genocide, and to support Islamophobia in this country and in other countries. None of these are public benefits. All of these, the disbenefits, the harms outweigh the benefits. And so there's a case for actually, you know, at least sanctioning, if not closing down, really a wide slew of these large Zionist family foundations.
Yeah. And very briefly, Masood, because we're almost out of time, but the Islamic Human Rights Commission has been targeted with complaints, as indeed many other Muslim charities have been targeted. I mean, why do you think that is, very briefly?
Well, first of all, the charitable wing of IHRC has been targeted. And indeed, many massages over the last 3 months, we had huge number of charities coming to us and asking for help because they're being targeted, because they're being pro-Palestine and, you know, a variety of things. The standard that the Charity Commission is using in these cases is completely different. It's almost like Alice in Wonderland. You know, it really is crazy. Yeah. With the Zionist charities, what they come to an understanding is to create a little few boxes that you could take, and that covers them, you know, for the dispute. Sure. And what Muslim charities, you know, the Interpol, the you know, other charities are being vigorously attacked day
indeed.
In, day out.
Indeed. Well, unfortunately, we are going to have to leave it there because we're out of time again. So let me thank our guest, Masood Sijara, and, of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Palestine Declassified will be back next week with more forensic investigations and analysis. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
in the limelight.
The Al-Aqsa storm operation has irreversibly redefined the battlefield dynamics, especially with the Palestinian resistance stunning the military pundits in the West with its preparedness and the ability to inflict heavy and irreparable blows to the occupying Zionist regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, the past 15 weeks have been marked by the Palestinian resistance against the Zionist regime genocidal aggression on the Gaza Strip, with the armed wing of the Palestinian resistance group Hamas surprising all and sundry with its massive weapons arsenal, all of them locally manufactured. Toward the end of 2023, the martyr Izzeddin Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas, published a video showing its missile arsenal that is able to reach every nook and corner of the occupied territories. And more than 3 months after the Zionist regime launched its aggression, followed by extensive operations by the resistance groups against the occupation forces, this arsenal remains intact. Military experts in the West acknowledge that the Israeli regime, with all its advanced and sophisticated weapon systems imported from the United States and Europe, has been unable to match up to the armed wings of the Palestinian resistance groups and their fighters. Despite the Zionist regime dropping 67,000 tons